What is the meaning of this vision of a man on a red horse? What's this all about? So we learned Rashi, we learned the Mitzudais. They basically said the same thing, that we refer that the person on the red horse represents Modai and Yavon. Modai and Par Modai, the Kastim, Parasu Modai, all of the aggressors, all of our enemies thus far, from the point in time of Zechariah going back, and their end will come. Their end will be red blood. They will be destroyed. And afterwards, he sees other horses, other colors, that represents other problems that are coming our way, and they also will suffer their fate. That's pretty much what Rashi said. Okay, this was pretty much what Rashi said. There are going to be other issues, other problems. And then we learned the parish of from the Gemara. The Gemara told us about what does it mean that Zechariah sees Hadasim Asher Bamitsula, the Acharav Susim Adumim. So Rashi told us that even though it's a Gemara, it does not fit into the words of the Pasuk, and the Gemara we learned in the Radak refers to the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to destroy the world. He saw that the people of the Tzaddikim are few, and that the world is not achieving its purpose. He wanted to destroy the world, but when he looked at Hananya Mishol Azaria, the Hadasim, Bein HaMitzula, Asher BaMitzula, which was BaMitzula is Bavel, then he changed his mind, and no longer did he decide to destroy the world. Instead, his anger turned to different colors. It says, we learn miyod niskorra daita shenemar huemir hadasim. At the end of the Radak, we learn yesterday was aviachre zem miyod shechoyrin. The black nasu sirukin va'adumim levonim. Okay, it means, I don't know exactly what this means. It means streaks of other colors. The gloom and doom came to an end when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take a look at Hananya, Mishael, Azariah. It's interesting that we have in our Eshrog three hadasim. That's the meaning of Ashkenaz, and it's interesting why is that? So I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. The meaning to have three hadasim. Three hadasim, two eros, anaf eitz avos. Anaf eitz avos clearly means two. Anaf eitz avos, you have to have one esrik. Ulekachtem lechem b'yom harishon pri eitz hadar. That's one pri. Kapois tamarim. Okay, it says the branch of a palm tree, that's one. Then anaf eitz avos v'arvei nochal. Arvei nochal, I guess, is b'loshon rabim. And anaf eitz avos is also b'loshon rabim. Yet we take three hadasim and two aravos. Why? I have no idea why. There must be a very good reason, but I just want to take note that here.
The words in the pasuk. Anaf eitz avos, three words?
Two words. Is that the reason? Okay, could be. It's a remes.
Number of words.
Okay, could be. In a chonami. But the meaning of the words is b'loshon rabim, which would mean at least a minimum of two. So when it comes to the Aravos, we have two. When it comes to the Hadassim, we have three. So you're saying more of a drasha that there are three words. So the three words indicate it's supposed to be three. Could very well be. Now, by the way, by Hasidim,
by Lulav, there is no vav, the kapat.
Right, that's why it's only one. Right, that's a drasha.
It's only one.
Even though kapos really is branches, you are correct. Even though kapos plus drasha ram, it's two. But mer makes a drasha, kapas, excellent. It's chaser, there's no vav. To make a drasha, only take one lulav branch.
And then you have the vavs, vav mechaberet, kapot tmarim, ava anaf esavot, ve'arve nachal, so yuchubarim. And then
all held together.
By itself. That's why
the esrog is separate.
With the other.
Everything is a drasha. Everything comes from a drasha. And I just want to take note that I don't know about other chassidim, but by the Chabad, they take a lot of hadassim. They don't take two. They take I don't know if there's a number. Some take 12. There is a minute they take 12 hadasim. I don't know what Chabad takes at least 12. I don't know if everyone takes it, but I know the Rebbe took had many hadasim. could be it was 12, it could be it was more. And what's the source? I don't know what the source is. Our minigam Ashkenaz is to take three. And I just found it interesting that according to the Gemara says, I saw Hadassim. Who are the Hadassim? According to the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, it was Hananya, Mishael, the Azariah, three. There were three Hadassim which Hashem saw, and based upon those, Hashem decided he's not going to destroy the world. So you see over here at least a remes that Hadassim in the Pasuk, how often does it say Hadassim? It doesn't say Hadassim in the Torah too often. And go to look at the computer, but I don't believe it says the word Hadassim all that often. And here, the Hadassim, the Gemara refers to three people, Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. Okay, now, that we learned the Gemara, now let's continue further. It says Ish. Okay, we're up to over here. I put it on the screen. You see on the screen, it says Ish. There's a person, then Zachar. Yeah, I'm Michal speaking.
If the meaning is Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah, now that happened in the past.
Correct.
That's not a future prophecy.
Well, in a Hanani, I mean, the Gemara is analyzing, that's not Pshat. Zechariah is speaking, he's saying these words. The Gemara is just borrowing these words as Kedarkai, and the Gemara is just saying a drasha. Hashem wanted to destroy the world. He saw Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. There is something unique about them, which we learned Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. There's something unique about them which changed Hashem's attitude towards the world. We had that with Noach. Hashem wanted to destroy the world. Hashem did. And then when the Mabul was over, Vayarech Hashem Esreach HaNichayach, and Hashem said, never again will I destroy the world. We make mention of this on Rosh Hashanah, the Musaf Rosh Hashanah. V'gamis Noach, Be'ahava Zacharta. It's a very powerful theme to focus on this year. This year, like never before, has the world been smitten by an issue that affects every single living creature in the world. I can't tell you chapter and verse in the details, but I read an article a while ago when Corona first broke, during the height of Corona, and it said that never in modern history, maybe even world, never in even world history, was there such a thing that literally affected the entire world from the North Pole to the South Pole. Even World War II, 75 years ago, this article, it suggested and tried to prove it didn't affect the entire world. We can't, you know, most of us either we were not alive then, or we were too young to really appreciate what was going on then. But even those who live in the aftermath of World War II, after the Holocaust, it's hard for us to imagine that the Holocaust and the world wars did not affect every single corner of this world, some way, some form. But the thrust of this article, and you have to research if this is really correct, says it's not true. It's not true. There are major parts of the world that the World War One, World War II didn't touch, didn't affect them. Okay, it trickled down, affect the economy, the global economy. There was a major war going on in the world. It's true. But it didn't affect their daily lives in such a major, major way. Even I would imagine, even in America. Think about it. I can't tell you. I don't know. I wasn't around. But even in America, during World War II, if you were a soldier or you were the parent of a soldier and your child was overseas and you didn't know if he was alive or dead, obviously the anxiety can eat you up to pieces. That goes without saying. But let's say you didn't have children in the war. You didn't have family. And you yourself were not fighting for whatever it is. In America, the war was not fought on the soil of America. And the economy did not shut down during the war. In fact, the economy was booming. The war effort took the country out of the depression. That's what they say, at least in the textbooks. Okay, all of the whole entire country was working in the economy of producing weapons for the war. But in America, there was a war. There was a war going on the whole world. But Corona, every single country in the entire world, from the North Pole to the South Pole, everyone is wearing a mask. There's no country in the entire world where you will not find a mask. Everyone is affected by it. Everyone has victims of Corona. Everyone is talking about it. It has changed everyone's outlook on life. When did you ever have such a thing like this that we can really think about? that affected every living creature at the same time. It's an amazing phenomenon. The Mabul seemingly destroyed the entire world. I know you'll say there's a machlokes, the Mabul happened in Eretz Yisrael. You can probably have a big machlokes, the Mabul happened in America. Where was the Mabul? When the Torah tells us there was a Mabul, what does that mean exactly? Which countries? What was the world? No one knows the answer to these questions. What was happening in America at the time of the Mabul? Were there any living creatures? Were there any animals? Were there any people? No one really knows. No one can really tell you a definitive answer. What
would it matter anyway?
I don't know. That's also a debate, if it matters or doesn't matter. I don't know. We don't know. We have no idea. We have no idea what happened. But from the Torah's perspective, it would appear that the world that counted, the civilized world, was completely destroyed. And from top to bottom, if you want to look at the Midrashim seem to indicate that the world, literally, the whole world was just one big swimming pool. Hey, I that's what it's from the Midrashim. If you want to go, how literal do you want to go take all of these Midrashim with Kima and the constellations and the flood and what was taking place? But the Mabul was certainly an event that from the Torah's perspective, was the end of the world. And in Rosh Hashanah, Hayom Haras Olam, when we reflect, we spend plenty of time, a lot of effort goes into reflecting upon Noach, V'gamis Noach, Ba'avos Zacharta, Ba'aviachas Mehamabul, L'shachis Kol Bosar, Ibnei Roya Ma'al Aleihem, even though they were evil, and they deserved it, he made a shavua that he will never destroy the world. We're living now during the Mabul. We're in the Teva. We're barely surviving. We're barely hanging on there. The whole world is really extremely delicate. We're walking on eggshells. And we come to Rosh Hashanah. Never before in generations can we connect to the section of tefillah of Zichroinos like we can this year. When we can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen, you know, the world came to an end in the time of Noach, but you know, the world came back, it rebound, they were resilient, there was a renaissance. He came out of the Teva, he rebuilt the world. So just because we had a year, six coming to 7 months already, where the world has been shut down and in a matzav of chaos, it ain't over yet. V'gam es noyach ba'ahava zocharta. You did it once before, Hashem. The world came to an end and you allowed it to spring back, to develop, to succeed. So we, on this day of the renewal of the world, have an opportunity to put an end to Corona. Put a thorough end. Very, very tension. A lot of tension these last couple of days. I sense a lot more frustration out there these last couple of days than the whole summer, in fact. Okay, with the uptick. It's not for nothing that there's a lot of tension, because we have to really do something about it. We have to have emuna pshuta that our koyach ha-tfila really makes a difference. It's a very big nisoyin. A lot of people are miyayish. A lot of people that I know, including myself, you have a feeling when it comes to davening. It's like, what difference does it make? It makes a difference. If you really put your mind to it, every moment that you every word that you chap in the middle of daydreaming, you grab onto a word, to a phrase, you close your eyes and you think about it, and you connect even for that just few moments, it might be worth everything. Okay, you have a whole day of davening, and even if you grab out of the whole day of davening just a few words here, a few words there, so it's good. That's what you need a whole day of davening for. No one expects you to daven and concentrate every single word the entire day. But at least to grab, if you do this the entire day, hopefully there will be a few expressions that will resonate with you, that will trigger an emotion, and you'll be able to shut out all of the thoughts that are penetrating your mind about life, and make that moment of connection, especially this year where it's something to think about. So here, we're going back over here to the Hadassim. That's how we got into this discussion, that Kadosh Baruch Hu, the world came to an end, and he saw something about them. Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. And somehow, to me, it's very bizarre. Why were they the tipping point? What was it about them? I look at Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. You know what I just think? Stubborn people. That's what I think about them. It's very nasty, right? A stubbornness. It's Nebuchadnezzar says, Nebuchadnezzar, he sees his people, you're going to work for me. He sees they have talent, extremely valuable people, an unusual talent. None of his people in Babel had any, did not have the talent, the Kechas HaNefesh, to run a government like Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. But he wanted them also to participate and adapt the culture of Babel, and to bow down before his idol. And these people are just stubborn mules. They just will not budge. We're not going to bow down to you no matter what. You're going to throw us into the fire. We're going to run your government. We're going to control the economy. We're going to lead in every sector of society. We're going to be the leaders. But we're not going to bow down to you. Go get lost. Go jump in the lake with chutzpah. Food? We're not eating your cold seeds. We're not going to eat. We're not coming to your state dinner. We don't care. There's nothing, with all the COVID, everything you want to give us, all the enticements. To me, it's this incredible akshonus. This akshonus. And you know, I have been brought up where akshonus is not a good thing. It's like too much. This action. In fact, this summer, there's an elderly woman, and I see her only in the summer. I go to an event every summer, and I see her, Baruch Hashem. She's no youngster, and I give her a ride home every year. I take her home. I talk to her. I read up a relation with her, and she wanted me to do something. And I basically told her no, and she said to me, you're an action. You're just a stubborn mule. And she started. And he's right. Akshonus is not that something that I grew up with is not being a good thing, but yet you see in Chazal, it depends where, when, you know, it depends.
It's
where
a double-edged sword.
Absolutely. Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah have this extreme stubbornness in Golos.
Or Azus, it's called.
Azus is chutzpah.
We are a nation that without
to Am Kishayref,
without that toughness,
right? Israelis have that Azus.
There is also something called Azus de Kedusha.
Oh, Gaiva de Kedusha. Gaiva de Kedusha. This is a dangerous game. Chutzpah Yaske, the chutzpah of the to bring Mashiach with chutzpah. And this Azus de Kedusha, Gaiva de Kedusha. Absolutely, this is a very dangerous game. But that's not.
Azus de Kedusha exists. Chutzpah de Kedusha is, what do you call it? Gaiva de Kedusha is a newfangled thing.
It's a new thing. Gaiva de Kedusha. Okay. So, but you know something? I'm not even referring to that. I am just talking about stubbornness, akshonus. It's not an Azus in my mind is a certain pride. There's a certain pride that goes along with my observance. No.
That's not how my Rebbe defined it. My Rebbe defined Azus as not backing down from a challenge.
Okay, not backing down from a challenge. Rav Kalbach. Okay, these are all very fine points, fine lines. But there's a mida. There is something called stubbornness. And Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. It was they who this Chazal tell us, based upon this pasuk, what we learned here, is the reason why Hashem decided not to destroy the world, which, and there's probably no one that we relate to more than Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah in Tanakh, because they were living in Golos all alone, and they were running, they embraced the world, because they were running it. They were Nebuchadnezzar's right-hand people. They ran everything. They were his top, he was top servants. It would seem from Chazal that they were the on his cabinet. Nebuchadnezzar didn't know the alphabet. He didn't know how to run a country. They knew how to do, he had all the skills, like the time of the Barbanel, remember? Yes, we also go to the Barbanel. So he ran for Ferdinand, Isabella. He ran the country. They couldn't survive a day without him. And yet when they told him, you know, just convert, a big deal, just go through the motions, lip service, you can be a Shem Shabbos, just for the camera, don't embarrass me, just bow down to the idol, just say a few words, come into the church, big deal, you can go back home, you can be a Shem Shabbos, I'll even pay for Shabbos. No. And this akshonos, this incredible stubbornness in Golos, is something that the Ribbono Shel Olam is so impressed with. We don't appreciate it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu does appreciate this stubbornness, that because of this stubbornness, Hashem decided, you know what? I'm not going to destroy the world. The world is going to continue. The world is going to achieve its goal. It's an awesome chiddush. So that's what the Gemara says, this pasuk. Hashem saw Vihu Oymed Ben Ha'ish, on the horse is Hashem. Hashem Ish Milchama. Hashem was on a horse, a red horse. Hashem wanted to bring blood to this world. And when Hashem saw, and when the horse, the Ish on the horse saw the Hadassim Bamitsula, Hashem said, I'm not going to destroy the world. The color of the horse changed from red to white, black, Susim Adumim. I don't even know. I really don't understand what it means over here in the streaks. Surukim means also streaks.
Well, we're going multicolored. We're going to meet them again in Perek Vav.
These same horses. Okay, I didn't learn that
far. Four of them.
Okay, so the Dal Malchus. This is a very powerful Musar Haskel that is relevant for all of us. Let us go further now in the words of the Radak. Ish Hu Malach Hashem. Okay, I'm reading over here the first. I'm reading over here where it says what Ish writes smack in the middle of the page. V'chein the Ish is the Malach. Okay, it's an example. Another example. Ish Gavriel. V'chein Oachu b'sefer Inyan. And later on, when coming that supposed pasuk Gedaf Malach Hashem Oymei Ben Hadasim. V'ro Oisay Rechev Al Sus Moira Lemihiros Shlichusay. A horse is very quick. A horse is a symbol of swiftness. V'tam Odom Ushar Hagvanim Efsha Shnemu Latam. Shnemu Latam. Why are they? What's the significance of red and other colors? Efsher shenemru litam. I don't know what that means. There's a reason. It was said litam for a reason, but he's not giving us the reason now. He's coming to tell us the reason now. It's not. It's not just an insignificant detail. There's something very significant. Kosav adoni avi zal kisus adoim remez l'vuchanetzar hanikwa reishay di dahava. In the dream of Daniel, he saw a statue, and the statue had different parts. The top part was the head. The head was gold. Mm-hmm. Gold in Chazal is always associated with red. There are seven types of gold. And one of the golds, a gold of red, a reddish gold, a reddish color, reddish hue. Reisha didahava. V'yazafu adoim. Ki nevuaso chaysa ba'arba malchuyois. K'moy this nevuaso here, we're coming into the territory of Michal Miller. Michal Miller is the expert in Dal Malchuyois. And he's telling us here that this Nevuah over here, the reading over here is also discussing the Dalid Malchios. And the first one is Nebuchadnezzar. Ba'ar Malchios, Nebuchadnezzar, just like Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And in his dream, the Dalid Malchios, it was a statue, and the statue had four parts. And the four parts represents the Dalid Malchios here as well. This Ish on the horse also represents one element of the Dalid Malchios. Umaros Daniel, the Afopich, Shasusim Heim, Hoyu B'Moshul Hamalochim, Even though the horse represents the shlichus of Hashem, the agency of Hashem, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it should be done, Hu Omar Vayehi, Hu Tziva Vayamot, when Hashem gives the command, it happens. So we already used up the metaphor of a horse. Nevertheless, we're going to be using it, we're going to recycle it, we're going to be using it again. ופרש איש רכב כי המלאכים מיושבים בתחתונים וכל מעשה הקל בארץ. במלאכים, they rule on the lower worlds, וכל מעשה הקל בארץ על ידם ובאמצע אוסם. It's getting out into some type of stuff over here, which is very dangerous. Talking about angels having shlita on this world, they are Hashem's agents. Hashem is giving over his power.
But they're each one of them
the messenger
in charge of a particular right. nation.
Yeah,
and is sort of an ambassador representing their affairs.
Okay, representing Hashem. It's a very dangerous thing. Where do you say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ashkacha Pratis, our Emuna Pshuta, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he rules the world himself, versus this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he delegates his labor, his actions to angels. Dangerous, dangerous concept. It's very mystical. Ushlichus Haysa La'akar Malchus Bavel. And the shlichus of these angels is to uproot the kingdom of Babel. Even though they already ceased to exist, so he's saying something very interesting. That since a nevuah generally is to tell you what's going to happen in the future,
right?
Zechariah over here is standing after Babel already has come to an end,
right.
And Madai and Paras are in full swing. We're now going to learn about the end. The demise of Paras Umadai, the
right.
demise of Yavan, the demise of Edom. So let's just continue the narrative where we're holding. Why?
What he's saying is, Shlemus is giving us the big picture.
The big picture. And the big picture demands that we go back. Before you can go forward, you have to go back. When a pitcher throws a baseball, before he goes forward, he goes back. He has to wind up. So in order for us to appreciate the future, the demise of Paras Umadai, Yavan, and Babel, we have to go back and analyze the Churban of Babel as a dogma, a prototype, or at least to see the big picture, they all come together. Fine. This is the place in Paras. And this took place during the Malchus of Paras. Fine. So what have we learned? This section that the Ish, the horse, represents the Ish Elokim is Hashem. And that's really based upon the Gemara. Hashem Ish Milchama. Hashem is riding a horse. The symbolism of Hashem riding a horse indicates that his will be executed swiftly. In this world, a horse is a symbol of swiftness. Hashem riding the horse indicates his desire of what he wants will happen swiftly. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu has all the patience in the world, and more often than not, it takes generations for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to put everything back together, to give reward and punishment. In this instance, Hashem is not going to wait. Hashem is in full swing. Then he went on to say, even though that's one shot, but let's not deviate from what Rashi said and what from the Mitzvot David said, meaning that the Ish also represents an angel. It also, it's going to have a dual meaning. It represents angels. An angel or angels is the other ones. And what are these angels here for? They're here to destroy the nation of Babel. What do you mean? Babel has already been destroyed. That's right. We're doing Chazoras Hashir. Chazoras HaMaimer. We're going to review history thus far for the purpose of building up to describe the future of the demise and the churban of Paras Umadai, Yavan, and Edom. V'oyme ben hadasim asher b'mitzula heim Yisrael hu ad hadasim klal Yisrael. What's the mitzula? The v'him shum lehadasim retzoloyme le'atze hadas lefi sheyesh lam reyach toif, fragrance, a reyach nichoyach. You always wish people to give nachas ruach. What does it mean, nachas ruach? Well, that means, it's not so simple what that term means. You should have nachas from your children, right? It's a Yiddish nachas. Because everyone knows the joke, Esav had a child in the Torah called nachas. So you don't want to have a child like Esav. You want to have Yiddish nachas. What does it mean, nachas? Satisfaction. Satisfaction. What is satisfaction? It is associated with fragrance. Vayorach Hashem es reyach ha-nichoyach. Nichoyach has the same shoresh as nachas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he inhaled, he smelled the reich hanichoyach, the fragrance. What does that mean? I don't know, but it means something like Hashem had satisfaction. Hashem doesn't smell. Hashem is not an earthly being. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he had satisfaction. And the way we can relate in the spiritual sense, satisfaction. So when it comes to Hadassim, Hadassim means Hashem had nachas in this world from Klal Yisrael. And that is why we mentioned yesterday, when you study the Talmud, you will discover every time a dead person comes to this world, in all of these mystical stories, where the dead return, and they show up. They're always showing up with Hadassim. Why? So if you look in the commentators, they'll tell you, because when a dead person comes to this world, the first thing they say is, this world stinks. That's their reaction. That's what it says in the big books. They're in Gan Eden, and they come into this world, and they see people wasting their time, pursuing the wrong things, living a life of make-belief, a life whose values get you nowhere in the next world, not provide you any traction, any value in the next world. And when they see this, it's nauseating to the degree where the same way if a person would walk into, would walk into a septic tank, a person would sink, would live in a septic tank, it stinks. So when the dead people from Gan Eden come into this world to them is one big septic tank. That's how they look at this world. It stinks here. So what do? They bring with them Hadassim. Hadassim to dispel, to
counter,
to fumigate, to counteract the odor, the foul odor of this world. That is the simplest interpretation why the dead people from the next world are always showing up in this world with Hadassim. But on a deeper level, the reason why they're coming with Hadassim is it's not from that they need to protect themselves from the stink of this world. It's for us to look at them. They come with Hadassim. They're in a world of satisfaction. In this world, nobody is satisfied. Everyone is miserable. Everyone. You know someone who's happy? You're very lucky. Most people, they're miserable. Some people hide it better than others. But everyone has something that's bothering them. Even Talmidei Chachamim, they're jealous. Okay, there's plenty of jealousy. Why is it that yeshiva, there's no dirtier politics in the world than yeshiva politics? You think the Trump and Biden is dirty? You haven't gone to yeshiva in a long time. Yeshiva politics can be even more nasty. It's hard for you to believe, right? I can tell you stories. It can be even uglier than Trump and Biden. Okay, that's the way the world goes. This is a world where no one has satisfaction. Anything they do, there's always trouble. Whether it's covet, whether it's jealousy, in Ruchni is jealousy. But the Olam HaEmes is a world of nachas. It's a world where people are satisfied. They grow yelchu mechayel el choyel. They grow all these things. Hadassim represent reach. Reach represents nichoyach. Nichoyach comes from the word of nachas. It's a world of satisfaction. When they come from the other world to this world, they come with hadassim to tell us, not because they're trying to insult us and tell us that it stinks here. That's not the only pshat. They're trying to remind us, you know, in the next world, there is satisfaction. So don't get so worked up about this temporary world. Even though you struggle, have emunah, earn your points, earn your rewards. And it's like the airline industry. You have to earn points so you can fly high wherever you want to go in the next world. You need to earn some points and not play games. Let's go further.
May I say
yes.
Something that bothers me here? Zechariah was not a simple person. He was a very smart chacham. Not everybody can get nevuah. And he saw a vision, and he doesn't understand anything. And he says, Ma ele Adoni, that's it. Now come all the mefarshim, and they start to explain what it means, the what he saw. How do they know? How does the Radak or the Rashi or whoever it is, how
Excellent.
Do they know what it means here? It actually says here that the world is a simple world, smells good, it looks so nice, it's so nice that the world goes along. You know, I'll bring something that I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, from Bialik. Bialik was a Meshorer, and he lived through Braut Kishinov, and he says, Hashemesh zarcha, v'hashita parcha, v'hashochet shachat. Everything was so simple, so nice, so beautiful, and somebody slaughtered people. And this is what he said. And Zechariah also lived in it, probably not in a good, complete, perfect world. And he says, look, everything is so nice. Hadassim smells good. And Ish Olech Ben Hadassim, Susim, Tzva'im Shonim. I don't understand what's going on here. So nobody can explain it unless what he says later on, he explained to him. That's it. מלאכים, אני שלחתי מלאכים, והם עושים מה שהם רוצים לעשות. That's it. I don't know how they get the, all the explanations. These are the Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and this is, I would say, Hadassim, Hadassah, Esther is also Hadassah. But I don't know how they get the solutions suddenly. The Mefarshim, how do they get it? From where do they get it?
Well,
that's what I
we have to understand this high, we okay, there, I hear what you're saying something, whatever anyone's going to say is going to not going to answer the question. Or tell us, yeah.
What I can say maybe is this is talking, it's a chalom.
Okay.
So the Parshim are being the poser chalomim.
Who, the Mefarshim?
Yes.
Okay.
But you also have to say something. The Mefarshim are writing, they're writing 2,000 years later. 2020, hindsight is 2020. At the time, it didn't happen yet. So if it didn't happen yet, it's exactly, Mo'ela Adoni. It did not yet happen. The Radak, the Mitzudois, Rashi, they're writing their commentary 2,000 years later. They have 2,000 years of commentary to look back and understand. We know what it means. That's right. We do all know what it means. Zechariah could not possibly have known what it meant because it did not yet happen. But we, who stand 2,000 years later, and for us it's already 3,000 years later, we are, that's right, we have 3,000 years of material to cipher through and to analyze, and it gives us the ability to shed some light what these things mean. The Talmud wasn't written yet.
I don't want to.
None of these things happened yet. It wasn't possible for him to understand. But that's right. We can understand, and also there are different levels of understanding. There's a whole different answer. Of course. Let's say make believe Zechariah was a Navi. So make believe Zechariah knows everything that we know. Very good. But because he was so great, the greater you are. So the Rambam says, "Tachlis ha'idia sheneida shaloi neida." The goal of knowledge is to know that you do not know. So, on a simple level, yeah, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, right? You go as a child, 1 + 1 = 2. You don't even think about it. Really? Is that really true? 1 + 1 = 2. Do you know how many people have gotten postdoctorates in proving that it's not true? Okay.
Nowadays, it's not necessarily true anyway.
You understand? So there are simple facts, which a simple mind, of course, 1 + 1 = 2.
Only for white
you, when you go, when you get a little bit older,
only
you
for
can.
White people.
What?
Only for white.
He says only white people.
Math is now considered in some circles to be a white supremacist.
Nowadays, he was saying
along with logic.
Ma'ele Adoni. What is this? And nobody understands. And maybe years after that, maybe somebody will explain what the corona is and why is it like that? Why is it all over the world? Not, actually, it's true that
look, there are so many
than the previous generations.
There are so many psukim we've come across in learning Nach where it's so easily understood, literally, what it means based upon the technology we have available today. We have psukim which talk about, it's obvious, it's talking about tanks, talking about airplanes and technology. Safa achas. What does it mean? It'll be, the world will be a safa achas, one language. So many, many people are not embarrassed to tell you, even the Chari, not embarrassed to tell you, that when it says in Pasuk, the Mos HaMashiach V'chol will be a safa achas, it means technology. It means internet protocols, HTTP, hypertext, I don't even know all the terminologies. The internet protocols, the handshakes between servers to communicate. You can go, the only reason why today you can make a phone call and you can speak to someone by the Kaisel HaMaravi in an instant or talk to someone in China is because the language of technology is universal. The codes, the protocols, the numbers, the bits and bytes that make up these computer systems have to follow a single protocol in order to be able to communicate across the entire world. That ability to communicate is something which is a very powerful tool in serving Hashem. So until this generation, when someone is Safakas, everyone's going to speak the holy language. The whole world's going to speak Lashon HaKodesh.
Oh.
Okay, no one's denying that that's what it will ultimately mean. But it's very obvious that until we achieve a state of the world, V'hoi Hashem l'melech al kol aretz b'yom ahu Hashem echad shmo echad, Sofa achas in the 21st century, there's a meaning of what it means. The whole entire world follows the same electronic protocols to communicate across the entire world. And that protocol allows the world to serve Hashem if they so want. So is that not a valid interpretation of the pasuk, which only we today can understand? And 2,000 years ago, even 50 years ago, maybe let's go back 100 years ago, was impossible to understand? Yeah, and that's a teeny example. There are much better examples than that. So it's true, at this moment in time, Zechariah says, Mo'ela Adonai, I have no idea what this is all about. But the day will come, but 2,000, 3,000 years later, we have the ability to take everything that has happened in history, take all of the other events, analyze it, to study it, and look back, and now we can decipher what these words mean. I don't think it's necessarily a question. All right, let's go further in the next paragraph. The next paragraph says, paragraph is the Acharav, okay, three lines after it gets like three lines in towards the bottom. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the very, very bottom of this page in bold letters. The Acharav Susim Adumim Sirukim Ulavanim Sirukim Min Sevashlo Nisparer. It's Lena Ma Hu. We don't know what color this is. So we had yesterday, Michal told us old French, it means a shade of gray, a shade of black. A certain type of black.
It wasn't old French. It was just a simple translation.
Okay, a translation, a certain, I guess, gray, a certain color.
Arabic, I think he said.
V'yesham, some say, shohayu sirukim b'masreik, v'ein loitam. Sirukim b'masreik means it was combed. It was sirukim b'masreik. Masreik is a comb, and it means it was, the horses were groomed. Okay, they were groomed with a comb. Someone came and they give haircuts to animals, to dogs, to animals. The horse was groomed. The ein loitam, if you want to say that, then I don't know what it means. I have no understanding. If you want to say it refers to color, then okay, color is color. If you want to say it means it was combed beautifully, I don't know what it means.
Maybe some sort of shiny coat.
A shiny coat. Okay. Vine sukim b'mare hazois mokim shechoyrim. Haniska b'mare ha'cheresh arba marukovois. That's later on. So he wants to make a suggestion that the word sirukim should really be read as, not, but it's like shechoyrim. Shechoyrim. So he's playing with the letters, and it's a word which means black. Indeed, the Targum we read yesterday says it means a certain type of black. And what's the deeper meaning? And like we learn later on, the later paragraph about the four chariots, and there it says one was black. So we are suggesting here the word she siruki means black. The yoina some tier game sirukim bimara hazois ka ko chachin, we learned that yesterday. Nuscho nacheres with the vavs kivachin the ela hasusim in adoyim lo hoya aleim roichev. Okay, and he's not telling us. Okay, the Targum over here, he's not telling us the translation is. We learn over here it means getting a color black. Maybe it means a black. Well, the Targum knew what color it is. Fine. It's either a certain type of color, or it's a shade of black, or it is combed, groomed. Now here goes on that these horses did not have riders. Only the first horse, the red horse, had riders. The other horses did not have riders. So he's coming over here to explain over here who is the Ish. Now, in this interpretation, the word Ish refers to Nebuchadnezzar. I didn't really explain it correctly before. Nebuchadnezzar was the Ish. We're going back to Babel, and the Ish that's running on the red horse is Nebuchadnezzar. Now, in the second of the pasuk, it says after Nebuchadnezzar, there were more horses. There was a horse that was Shikurim, a horse that was white, and a horse that was red. So what's the red horse? So according to the Radak, well, if the first red horse refers to Nebuchadnezzar, so that means that the second red horse refers to his son, Evel Meroidach. After Evel Meroidach came Belshazzar. There are only three generations of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, Meroidach, and Belshazzar, there were only four generations of Vashti. Vashti was the child of Belshazzar, and she was the carryover to Parasu Modai, the wife of Achashverosh. So we have here Yilu Amar Bachrim. So we're saying that the first verse was Nebuchadnezzar, then this is going to be his son or his grandson. And then Sirukim Levanim, Kiilu Amar Acharehem, Sirukim Acharehem Levanim. It means the word Acharehem. You have to repeat the word Acharehem. Means there was an entire process. There was a whole collection of them, one after the other. V'ine lo zochar k'neged hamerkav harviyas ki lo ro oisa b'zos hamar b'avur shohoisa rechoika. It was too far away. Afal pisha ro oisa b'maroi suacheras. Now, he's saying something that is explosive. I want to give you a mashal for this. In this mashal, according to Radak, he's saying really heavy, heavy-duty stuff. And okay, let's review. In the pasuk of here, it's v'ine ish rechev al sus odoim. Who is the sus odoim? This is Nebuchadnezzar. V'hu oimei ben ha'adasim. And he's in Bavel. Asher ba'mitzula, and the Hadassim is Klal Yisrael. Nebuchadnezzar is going to exile Klal Yisrael. He's going to take the exiles and bring them to Bavel. Asher ba'mitzula, which is in Bavel. After Nebuchadnezzar comes Susim Adumim, Sirukim Ulvanim. The word Adumim means the next generation of Bavel. The next generation, which means Bavel is going to continue for another two generations. And then when it says the word Sirukim, it appears according to the Mitzudah, according to Radak, Sirukim is a code for Paras Umadai. And then when it says Ulvanim is a code word for Yavan. If I'm not mistaken, that's what the Mitzudah stuff is trying to tell us. Nebuchadnezzar, his son, and his grandson, that's the next red horse. The Sirukim is Paras Umadai. And the Levonim is Yavan. Question, what happened to Edoim? They're supposed to be four Goliaths. Where is Golias Edoim? So he says here, we'll get to it later on. Or, since it was so far away in time, he couldn't see so far. his vision.
Well, but then if he's going to see it in the
something happened. I don't know. Good question. Why later did he see it, but why now? I don't know the answer.
There's another question.
Yeah.
That the first horse is referred to in the singular.
Ulavonim, yeah.
He's followed by plural, plural, plural.
Okay. Good point. Plural, well, there are two generations after Nebuchadnezzar. Evel Meroidach and Belshazzar. Sirukim, Paras, Tus, Paras Umodai, it's double.
Right.
And Ulavanim is Alexander the Great and then the Malchus split into three different divisions. It split after he died into three different branches after he died. So it was plural. There was always more than one. We always discussed, this is an old thing we discussed, that each of the Dalai Malchias. Yeah. Each of the Dalai Malchias, I mean, Chol doesn't like the end, but each of the Dalai Malchias is broken into two parts. There are the Kastim and Bavel. It's not just Bavel. There are the Kastim and there are the Babylonians. The Babylonian and the Kastim. Then comes Paras and Modai. It's not just one, it's two, Paras and Modai. The third is Yavon. Yavon is divided into Alexander, Mytoin, and then when he died.
No, it's Yavon and Mokdon.
Yavon and Mokdon. Yavon and Mokdon. Okay, so that's also, it's a pair. Yavon is Alexander, and Mokdon is his successors. That divide is Malchus into three.
How is that possible? Mokdon is his origin.
All right, but after Alexander died, his Malchus was splintered.
That's right, but it's
and
not...
it followed in his general way, his way of his mahalach, his values, his ideology was adapted by his successors, and they just split the world. It's between him and them. And then we come to the last, which is the most controversial, which many want to say is Edom, but Edom at the very end is a partner, Yishmael. Abichol doesn't go for that. He never went for that. He doesn't like that at all.
Literature says Seir.
Seir. Okay, so you want to say Edom and Seir. What's the difference between Edom and Seir? You have to figure that one out. But there are peers. I personally believe the most satisfying pshat in the Chad Gadya. Read the Chad Gadya. I find from all the things that I've seen, I spent a lot of time on the Chad Gadya, the only thing that really, really satisfies me, al-derech pshat, is this approach of this culture of Chaim Kanievsky, where he takes note that there are exactly 10 parts to the Chad Gadya, 10 parts, and we the first part is Klal Yisrael, the number 10 is the Ribbono Shel Olam, Yosa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gadya is Klal Yisrael, and again, the very end is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that leaves us with eight, and then he shows with Psukim, Imam Shet, Psukim fit like a glove, that the first two are Kastim Bavel, Yavon Mokdan, Paras. I made him say I skipped. Bavel Kastim, Paras Modai, Yavon Mokdan, and you want to say it's Edom and Seir. He shows that each Malchus. Of the Dalid Malchios, it's really two parts for a total of eight. So it's Arba Shehem Shmoina. It's four, which really are eight. And if you go to the Chad Gadya, you see his commentary on the Chad Gadya, he shows you a pasuk that explicitly refers to the dimension of each of the four Malchios, each one getting two, divided between the different elements of the Malchus, Kastin Bavel, Paras Modai, Yavon Maidon, Edom and Seir, in this succession, and it comes to the end with the Asa Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the first is the Gadya is Klal Yisrael. So it's,
I always thought that the Shoichet is from the good ones, not from the bad ones.
No, not according to him.
Shoichet.
Everything, so, no, okay, no, no, it's no good. Seir is Edom. It's Seir. Edom is according to Michal. It's Edom and Seir. Okay, Edom and Seir.
We said yesterday in the piyut, Kalei Seir v'choisnei.
Right,
and his father-in-law.
Seir is Edom and Chosno is Yishmael.
Right, so I like that pshat, but in respect for Abba Chol, who does not like to hear that.
You gotta look at the sources.
I think Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, if I'm not mistaken, he says what I said is that the Dalit, the last of the Dalit Malchios is Edom, and their partner is Yishmael. But every time I say this in the Shira, B'chol gets very, very agitated.
No, no.
And he's sitting right in front of me behind the glass screen. That's why I have a glass screen, because I need protection, because he's going to get all worked up. I need protection. I have a bulletproof screen over here. And he doesn't like that pshat. So out of deference for him, he says it's true, the idea that we divide up each of the Malchus into two parts, but he prefers to divide up the fourth Malchus between the people, or the element of the Malchus in earlier times that is called Edom, and later is called Seir. You have to clearly define what's the difference between Edom and Seir. You want to say Seir is Western civilization?
Lishpait is Har Seir, not Lishpait is Seir. Har Seir, which is Edom.
You haven't looked at all the sources.
We have here a dispute between Rabbi Kallis and Rabbi Miller. We call him Rabbi Miller for the moment, Rabbi Miller. We have a dispute as to how to divide up this the last of the four Malchias. Rabbi Kallis is telling us that the way to divide it up is Edom and Yishmael.
Tell Abraham to reread the chapter on pairs.
See, he's not going to be happy with that. That's why you have to come behind the glass screen. Okay,
I
so yeah.
You know that 9/11 happened on that Tuesday when we said Slichas Kallis Eir B'Chodesh. Like, that was on Tuesday,
9/11. I know.
Okay, that was a horrible day. I remember that day like it was yesterday. It's really amazing how time flies. 19 years, amazing. All right, so we have over here an incredible. Now he says over here something that is really, really off the charts. At the end of the Radak, Radak is saying absolutely amazing Kiddushim. Oh, you know why over here, according to my interpretation, I'm telling you that there are only three of the four Goliaths. First of all, he says to Doichik that we're going backwards in time. We're going back to Bavel. Excuse me, Bavel's already long gone. No, in order to wind up, you know, you got to wind up a little bit. So we got a chazer. We have to recap. We're going to go back to Bavel. That's a chiddush. Number two, what happened to the fourth Goliath? It's so far away. The mind, in your mind, you can't see it. When I read this, I'm reminded, I told you this a few times, I'm reminded of a story. I cannot vouch for its authenticity. All I can tell you is my Rebbe, Rabbi Aaron Raps, who was I'm very close to Aaron Raps. He's my Rebbe. He was my Rebbe a long time ago. He still is. And he writes a column on the front page of the Ated, either page 2, page 3, page 4, every single week for the last, who knows, 25 years. He's been writing Drush, like almost an editorial, a machshava, Divrei Torah, and in fact, they're putting out now a book of all of his best editorial, best chidushim. It's coming out very soon. What he writes in the Ated, and he said, I went to a yahrzeit suda not that long ago, and he said the following story. I cannot vouch for the story. I have never heard it before. It's very interesting. The story is that the daughter of the Chofetz Chaim said, his daughter said, I don't know which daughter, that every single year her father would come visit her in a dream. I don't know when. I don't know, maybe on his yard side. I don't know. Every single year he came to his daughter to say hello in a dream. And she began to notice as time passed on that every year he was more and more blurry. When he first came to the very first time, he was crystal clear. She had a dream. Okay, and then as time passed on, she kept on saying that he got more and more blurry. So she asked him in the dream. This is, again, I told you, I can't vouch for the authenticity. This is not my type of stuff. But it made an impression upon me, because he's a Bar Samach, Rabbi Raps, he said this, is that she asked him in the dream, why are you so blurry? Why every time you come, it's harder for me to see you? So he said to her, because every year I go higher and higher. Yelchu mechayil el choyil. So you're seeing me from a greater distance. As time passes, the neshama distances itself more and more from this world. When the neshama attempts to connect to this world, to its relatives, to its children, to see what's going on in this world that it left behind, assuming that it can, has permission, whatever the story is, it's more and more difficult for that neshama to do so, because as time goes on, the neshama is more and more distant. So from our perspective, it gets more and more blurry. Okay, I don't know.
We always say, when we say l'chaim for a neshama,
yeah,
you say the neshama should have a naliyah.
Naliyah, higher and higher. Okay, they say also there is such a thing, I don't know if people do it, there is such a thing that you don't have to say Kaddish after 50 years. People who are saying Kaddish, you only say there is such a thing. People don't do this. People take Kaddish forever. And even their grandchildren and great-grandchildren will continue saying Kaddish for the yard site of a great-great-great-grandfather who's died already 100 years ago. You see people do that. But it says in the big books that after 50 years, you're done. Person, Rachmanu Litzlan, loses a parent, let's say when they're a teenager or even younger, and it's already the 50th yard site, that's it. 51st yard site, you don't have to say Kaddish. And you don't have to, you're done. Why? Because the tradition is, after 50 years, the neshama goes so high, it doesn't need your Kaddish. It doesn't need you to give an aliyah, like you send up a spaceship into the atmosphere. You only need the fuel to get it into a place where there's no gravity. Once already there's no gravity, it doesn't need you. It can take care of itself up there. It doesn't need another aliyah. It can maneuver itself. So that's what they say. That's what it says in the big, when all the Sram of Avelos, it says 50 years, people don't want to acknowledge that. And there are many people that will say Kaddish even 100 years later for a relative. And that's fine. No harm done. Nothing to worry about. But this story, you know, it's an interesting story about the Chafetz Chaim. He's getting higher and higher. Is it a true story? None of my business. But when I read this Radak, and the Radak says that Zechariah can't see. He can't see what's going on. It's too far away. Now here we're not talking about a neshama that's going into another world, but it's a similar principle. Is when you see things in the next world, when you see visions, there are different positions, there are different distances of how far you're seeing. When we learn about a nevuah, we always think it's one size fits all. What's a nevuah? You get to go into a movie theater and it's a big screen and you can see it. So either you get to go to the movie theater, you don't get to go to the movie theater, but if you get to go, you get to see. Maybe it's Naslak Maria She'ena Mir. What does it mean? They turn on the lights. If you turn on the lights in the movie theater, so you can't see it so well. If you turn off the lights, then you can see it much better. But if you do get to see, you sing what you're supposed to see. No, that's not the way Nevuah goes. Nevuah, you're not going into a movie theater. You're going to the top of a building. And you're being told to look out into the distance. And sometimes people, you can see what's happening across the street. And some Nevuahs are to see what's happening down the block. And some Nevuahs see what's happening in another city. And not everyone has such good eyesight to be able to see what's happening far, far away. This is what the Radak is teaching us about the principle of Nevuah. Okay, let's go further.
One point. The word Sroukim reminded me of Yirmiyahu says, "Anochi neta'atich sorek." Ve'ech ne'efach shurei haget nochriya. I looked at the mefarshim by sorek.
Grapes.
The best
grape. Excellent. Sorek.
That means there are two colors. They are
sour grapes.
And in the middle it says the best. Sukim means the best susim.
Aha! Interesting idea. You're saying something very, very fascinating. There are weak animals. You want to bar from grapes, just like there are sour grapes, and there are beautiful, luscious, grade A grapes. And the word there is soidek. Hashem, I planted you as, it's a very famous haftarah, a very famous pasuk. I planted you to be a gefen sorek, a vine, the highest quality. and instead you betrayed me.
Here comes Yaakov.
You betrayed me, you became Velasorek bni asanot, also Pasuk Mechomesh. Velasorek bni asanot, the same exact word, sorek, is it spelled the same way?
With deeds, yes, it's so, the same word.
So the same word, so Dan Dowd is a sort of common saying something very powerful, that the word sorek
means... Ibn Ezra quotes that Pasuk as an example right. For this Pasuk.
Uh-huh, right. So Ibn Ezra actually quotes that. So if that's the case, he's saying there are susim adumim sirukim. You want to say al derech pshat means there are red horses of the highest quality, and there are also ulavanim shvach or weak horses that are not so good. The ones that are red, it represents a high quality horse, just like grapes, red wine, a rich deep red. That's a high quality grape. You have white grapes. White grapes is not considered to be, I mean, it's not really true, because the Gemara does say that if you bring out white wine after drinking red wine, you can make the bracha hatov hametiv, because white wine is usually of better quality. It does not have the advantage of the color. Al tishte al tered yayin ki yisadam. Don't look at the redness of the wine. Generally, we look for red wine. Red wine has a certain the mare also counts for something, but white wine also at least has a quality to it, and even in the halacha. But yet over here, you think a very fascinating idea. There's susim adumim sirukim. Sirukim refers. Kashanim is red. That's a different word. That's
red.
Okay, so we have over here red and white.
It's nice that we learned that now.
Maybe Sirukim is blue. So it's red, white, and blue. America. I saw you going to America. The Achad of Susim, I saw George Washington riding on his horse on the Susim Adumim Sirukim Ulvanim. Red, white, and blue. Red, blue, and white. Who knows? It's not a joke. I'm not
it's
joking.
Like the old joke.
I'm not joking here. There are many levels, layers of interpretation. I don't think it's a joke, because if everyone over here is telling us that the word Sirukim relates to the word related to black, but it's not exactly black, so a navy blue, some people who are colorblind cannot tell the difference between navy blue and black. But the blue of America is not navy blue. It's a richer blue. But maybe you want to say really that's what it means. Who says it's not what it means? Who says it's not what it means? Okay? You don't know. We don't know.
Dad Karn would call it midnight blue.
Okay, we don't. There is nothing to laugh about. The day will come when we have clarity in seeing the entire history of the world right in front of us in the Torah HaKadosha. Okay, we are now really at it. I really want to do one more pasuk, but it's very late already, so we're going to stop over here. We'll take a short break. We'll talk a little halacha about Rosh Hashanah. I want to tie up some loose ends about just to go through a couple of things. I didn't realize already Rosh Hashanah is mamish 2 days. We're not going to learn on Friday. In the year of Hashem, this Friday is Erev Rosh Hashanah. We're not going to learn on Friday, even though we have Zoom. It's going to be a little bit too difficult, I think, on Erev Hashanah to learn. Okay, we used to learn Erev Shavuos, we learned Erev Pesach, the way we learn Pesach, Erev Shavuos, but Erev Hashanah, it's too difficult to learn. It's long slichos, you have to take care of a couple of things, make some phone calls, whatever. So we're going to, the last day will be in Yirtz Hashem tomorrow.
Okay.
So we have to learn today, we'll learn some halachas, some agada, and tomorrow also we'll do some halach and agada before the Yom Hadin. Okay, we'll take a short break. I'll see you back in a few seconds.
Same reason I play on.
For those who won't be here tomorrow, I want to wish a Ksivah Sima Taiva today. So have a healthy, happy, wealthy.
Imale Hashem kol mish'alo yislib kol taiva. Uh-oh. What happened over here? I ended it by the host.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to send out my email tomorrow night instead of Friday.
People won't have a time for them.
You know, I can talk.
Sorry, I think it was my fault.
I'm going to do a surprise and then I'm going to tell you what it is.
Is it involved in Dunkin' Donuts?
What?
It involves Dunkin' Donuts, I mean.
No.
Is it?
What?
Is it Steve Mastodon?
No, it's.
Everybody says, sorry about that. I think it was my fault. I pressed the button that terminated the shiur by mistake.
Did anyone have a problem with the WhatsApp just now? Anybody there?
Yeah, yes, it throws us out.
Yes, yeah, all right. It's not run. My fault.
I had to join up again.
Hi, Michael. Yeah. It's not my fault.
That's not true.
Not this time.
How you doing? Servus, Laser Bachi.
Servus.
Agid gebench to you.
Thank you.
So nice. Gesehen. Naches. Agid
same. Same to you. Same to you.
So we see who's coming back. Everyone's coming back slowly but surely.
Yeah, everybody's back.
Yeah. Dr. Vilna's back. I saw Sander was there. Yes, Rabbi Aaron Akayan, Godel, how are you?
Baruch Hashem, how are you?
I don't like that rabbit name you put into me.
Rabbit name? You ever look at that email that I sent sometimes to you? I think it's someone yesterday. What's going on here?
So you're going to Young Israel, Rabbi? Where are going to be if
you're going to be here? I'll be here. I bought a ticket to the Young Israel in Midwood.
Okay.
What, yourself? You'll be
I'm going to go next door. I'm going to stand outside the window of the yeshiva and I'm going to listen from there.
Well, very good. Are we going to charge you a ticket?
As long as I don't get sick, I don't care. More important than a ticket.
Which yeshiva? Which yeshiva is sending
you? The yellow pole.
Everybody should be well.
Yeshiva should davening. They're going to schlep, you know?
A lot of places are going to do it quicker, they say. At least that's where I'm going.
It's going to be a nice, very cool weather on Rosh Hashanah.
So you wear a sweater, what's the problem? Yeah. I'll listen to the tekiyas, and then if I don't like it, I'll add my own tekiyas, and then I'll go home and sit down in a normal time to eat. The first day to know tekiyas anyway, so.
Right. How are you going to carry your marks around, sir?
We're dead end block. There are three Arabs. There's one Arab on the block, there's the Flatbush Arab, and then there's the Sephardi Arab.
No
problem. So I have no problem.
Plus you have one to the other.
Huh?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be Machma. You want to be Machma? Team of Gesinntheit Machma.
Hey, Mayor. Mayor.
So Miss Applegrove, are you gonna wear a mask there or no? Even though it's outside?
No, I sit outside, but I wear a mask because people walk by, you know.
Mayor, I wanna know if you sang the song.
If I could put a filter on the window, I would put a filter on the window.
He's not hearing me? Mayor. You can't hear me?
Okay. We can hear you, but who's that, Michael?
I want to know if you sang the song. I know you read it.
Yes, you can't get me rid of me that easy.
I just want to know if you sang it at least. All right.
Nobody wants to get rid of you. You're a good man.
Yeah, yeah. Rabbi Nachman, did you speak to Mark?
I wrote a song.
I spoke to Mark.
Yeah,
he's good.
He's home.
I spoke to Mark for a long time. He's good. He's home. Mark, Baruch Hashem, is home. He's home. He's resting.
Is he positive?
I think so. I think he's positive. Corona positive.
Oh, I got to look for those.
COVID-19.
Where did he get it?
He doesn't know.
He imported it from here.
He doesn't know. He's okay. Baruch Hashem, he's okay. He's resting. He's coming along. Baruch Hashem. Okay, let's spend some time today going through some basic things, and then we'll do a little